Hi, this is Elizabeth Grayson, Amanda from Highlander. You are listening to the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to episode 70 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On the show, we cover all things Highlander, including guest interviews, movies, TV shows, books, audiobooks, anime, games, special events, and a Highlander the Raven, an episode review, and more. I'm Kevin, one of your Blood of Kings hosts. However, I don't do this alone. I need my fellow mortal brother and fellow Highlander aficionado. With me is my co-host, Norman. Hey, Norm, I may sound a little different.
You sound sexy AF. Can I say that on the air? I can say AF.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's say what AF is for. Like the kid.
That's
like
what
kid
I was going it? For. Remember the episode of Friends where Phoebe gets a cold and she has a sexy voice.
Sexy voice. Yeah.
That's what I was going for. I got a little head cold this weekend, and so I was going for the sexy voice.
Well, make sure that you heal up because we're not immortals. You know, we can't just kick off.
Not yet.
Except for Kid O'Brady having that occasional sneeze.
Because, I know, right?
Like immortals never suffer from the common cold or the common anything or the fatal anything. Right,
right. Right. What if there was an immortal that, like, when they sensed another mortal, they farted? Would that be weird?
Maybe that could have plagued Kid O'Brady later on, you know, as he gets older. Like, it changes from, like, a sneeze to, like, an itch to maybe some, flatulence. Oh, yeah.
Hey, I sense an immortal. I smell one, too.
Much to the chagrin of his watcher.
That's right.
You know, hotboxing him, like, somewhere in a phone booth or something.
Oh, my God, that's funny. Well, Norm, on our last episode, we talked a little bit of mythos. We did the Blood of Kings episode 69, Highlander: The Promise.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was a lot of fun to cover that series. That series is so much fun.
And credit where credit is due, Kevin. You knocked it out of the park researching that like Adam Pearson would.
You know, that was a lot of fun. It was fun to do. So, yeah.
There's a lot to say. It's funny, too, because it was only like an hour or so, but there's so much to say about that book.
If we were to do another cover of one of those episodes, which one would you like to do?
Well, I mean, I definitely want to do like the Pain Eater because I think that goes into Diligen's more of his modus operandi, like why he's there. And
right.
I like the Pain Eater, and I'm going to spoiler alert this because one, Marcus Testeri just absolutely crushes it with his performance as Caspian.
Yeah, he does.
Right?
Yeah.
He has such a great voice. I always thought he did when he appeared in the Four Horsemen in Revelation 6:8. Two is because we never really get to see a lot of or hear or anything of Caspian's backstory. And Caspian was actually really, 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 you know, he there's so much more to him than just this the personification of famine.
Right.
So that's the great thing about that season two is that you got to actually see so many different layers of the Horsemen prior to what we saw in Comes the Horsemen in Revelation 6:8.
Yeah.
I mean, especially where Silas and Caspian are concerned.
Yeah. Just a wonderful production getting all those guys together for that. It was a lot of fun to dive into.
Yeah.
And whenever you can talk about mythos, it's a good thing. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, more mythos is good mythos.
Yes, we wanted to tease today's topic, Blood of Kings 70, Highlander the Raven episode review part 1 of 2. We're going to be covering the Raven episode 12, A Matter of Time. Mm-hmm. And then next week, we're going to be covering the two-parter of it, the second part of it, which is episode 13, The French Connection.
Right.
And for the fans that are out there, the production of Raven, instead of in Vancouver, took place in Toronto. Then they jumped over to Paris, and this is the two-parter that ends in Toronto and then takes you over to Paris.
Right.
And, you know, we've got a lot of stuff to say about these episodes because this is probably probably one of the fan favorite two-part episodes specifically for the Raven, and it, where we maybe kind of found itself in these two. So we'll dive into that a lot more. But Norm, I thought you'd let our listeners know where they can find us on Blood of Kings.
Absolutely. If you'd like to find us and contact us here on Blood of Kings, you can always find us on the Fandom Podcast Network Master Feed. And you can also find us on FPNet, which is on the Podbean app. You can find Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play for Android users. You can find us on Instagram at Blood of Kings Pod. You can also find us, as always, on our fabulous Facebook group page, Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom group. And you can find even more Highlandery goodness on our sister page, Blood of Kings, a Highlander CCG. That's collectible card game page, of which we're going to be discussing how you can access the CCG online.
Nice. I can't wait for that. That's cool, dude.
Now, if you'd like to contact us here, you can contact us through email at bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. You can also tweet us on Twitter at Blood of Kings Pod. Kevin, where can our audience find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix.
And you can find me on Twitter at Starfighter1701 and on Instagram at SoCalSwordFighter. And you can find Mike running from Damon Case because he is the at Immortal Chamoli on Twitter.
That's right. Also, please, we love iTunes reviews. Please head on over to iTunes and search Fandom Podcast Network. And if you like what you're listening to here on Blood of Kings, please leave us a review and mention that in the review. And we'll give you a shout out in a future episode of Blood of Kings. We would love to get some more reviews on iTunes. Also, if you would like to support the Fandom Podcast Network and Blood of Kings, head on over to TeePublic and search Fandom Podcast Network, and you can purchase your Blood of Kings t-shirts there. You can also get some mugs and some binders and, you know, tapestries and sweatshirts and stuff like that, and that helps support us. So support us by heading over to Fandom Podcast Network on TeePublic. Well, Norm, I think it's time to nurse this little throat thing I've got going on. I say we head on over to Joe's. What do you say?
I heard he pours a pretty mean hot toddy, which I think is perfect for you right now.
That means what I think it means, right?
Yes, it's hot and it's toddy.
Okay, let's head on over to Joe's. All right, all right. Here we are at Joe's, relaxing, trying this hot toddy here. Mm-hmm. See how it tastes. Not bad. Yeah. I hope it's what I think it is.
A little bit of whiskey, a little bit of hot water, a little bit of honey, a little bit of orange.
Okay. Zest. Something to kind of soothe the throat a little
bit. Yeah, it opens up those pores, opens up that throat of yours, man, and makes you sound sexy.
So how you doing, man? What's going on with you?
Not too much. You know, I'm healing from that historical European martial arts tournament that my club hosted not too long ago, a few weekends ago.
Right.
As the older I get, the longer it takes to heal. I don't have a magical healing pool. I don't have Mythos to show me the way there. But right, a lot of stuff is happening in the historical European martial arts community. So just if you're interested in sword fighting and you're part of the Blood of Kings Facebook fan page, I post a lot of information there. Actually, there's an event that's going to be coming up soon in Phoenix. And I'm not sure if I've mentioned this before. I'm pretty sure that I did. But we are one of the official sponsors for the Phoenix Society because they are hosting their annual tournament that supports, I guess it would be homeless children that need housing. Okay, right. They call it Streetlight. And that's happening, I should have this committed to memory. That's happening, I believe, is the second week of April. I'm actually gonna not.
Dude, you're like the real deal, man. You're like the fighter now.
That's I'm trying. Cool. I'm trying. But you know what? This is also a great cause. I believe this is the weekend of April 13th, 14th, 15th, but I will confirm that and put that in.
Well, make sure you talk to F. Braun because he knows some stuff.
He knows a couple things. Anthony knows a couple things.
pick his brain. You need to get that quickening knowledge from him and put it in your brain.
There's a picture. funny enough, someone reposted a picture on Blood of Kings, and he was firmly about to, like, pretty much cleave my head from my shoulders.
I saw that, yeah.
That would have been bad news for me. And he would have gotten basically, like, a quickening, you know, well, for me.
Speaking of Blood of Kings and related to what we're talking about tonight, the Raven, mm-hmm. I want to give a shout out to my friend Kat Cedar. He just started his Raven rewatch.
Oh, nice.
And he started an interesting discussion, which has been brought up before, of where the lovely Elizabeth Grayson, Amanda, hides that sword.
Ever since Lady and the Tiger, when she wore that skin-tight cat suit and all of a sudden pulled out this like two-handed sword, we're like, okay, obviously there's an Acme black hole pocket that the Wile E. Coyote used and lent it to her, because they're pulling swords literally out of like the fourth dimension, right?
Yeah, but who cares? I just always, I always remember that as famous behind the scenes, you know, with Duncan, and you see some prop guy hand it to him off camera.
Yeah. It's just one of those things. You know what? Here's the funny thing about that. People are okay with immortals and people living forever and cutting off of heads and all this kind of stuff, but they all get out of shape. Like, where does the sword come from? Yeah. Yeah, just, it's kind of like one of those, to quote Donna Latow from a show that we did like a couple episodes ago, if we, it's like, if that didn't happen, there would be no play.
Yes, yes. Well, what I liked about that, and also our editor Mike Sellers has also started his rewatch on Raven.
Yeah.
And we want to encourage our listeners to do the same, since we're going to be talking about
Absolutely.
It. And, you know, I've been rediscovering it, and I'm sure some people haven't watched it in a while, or even haven't watched it at all. Mm-hmm. And I highly recommend that they get the DVDs, because they have special features on them. But you can also get them digitally, too, through iTunes. I've done both, so I can have them both when I need to. But it's, you know, it's been a lot of fun diving back into it, and we'll touch on that shortly. But, Norm, I'm going to be... you know those bucket list items that you have in your life?
Uh-huh.
We've accomplished a few of those.
A couple, yeah.
I'm going to accomplish that this Friday night, and I'm really excited.
What's happening this Friday night?
Well, as of this recording, tomorrow I'm going to be off to Australia.
Okay, so we're recording on February 26th, and this Friday night would be March 2nd.
That's right. I am going to be seeing Queen with Adam Lambert in Melbourne, Australia.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, Aaron Gill and I got tickets, and I've been wanting to see them live, and I get a chance to do it. And even better, I get to see it in Melbourne, Australia.
What song do you want them to perform the most? And it doesn't have to be a Highlander song. It's just any Queen song, right? Or your favorite Queen song.
Are you kidding me? It has to be a Highlander song, in my opinion.
Okay.
Jeez. Obviously, Princes of the Universe, but for some reason, because the live setting, I really want to, and I've seen Adam Lambert kill this, I want to see Who Wants to Live Forever.
That's what I would want to see. Yeah.
And the other one that's not technically a Highlander song, but was played, and it's one of my favorite, actually, Queen songs, is Hammer to Fall.
Oh, yeah.
And I've seen my friend Blair Hiscock, who is recently saw Queen up in Queensland on their tour in Australia, he showed a quick video of them playing that song. So I'm hoping I get to see that song. So I assume the set list is going to be similar, because I love that song.
I'd love to see him actually tackle Flash Gordon, but that's me. That's just right.
But I'm really excited. I got my Queen t-shirt with me. I'm going to be taking it with me on my trip.
Sweet.
And I'll probably be buying one there. So yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Oh man, that's so awesome. Good for you. Good for you, and good for Aaron.
Thought we'd give a little, of course, sword experience update. I recently had mine last month here in Atlanta. I had a great time, and there's a bunch of new sword experiences. And of course, I always like to tell people, go over to Priscilla's Facebook page, Sword XP, if you want to share your experiences and talk more about this, your own sword experiences, if you have any questions. And of course, theswordexperience.com. March 9th coming up in Lexington, Kentucky. March 24th in Greenville, South Carolina. May 12th in Albuquerque. Minneapolis, Minnesota is June 9th. Not a location has been listed yet that I know of. Rome, Italy, June 30th. And there's two dates here in France, July 15th and July 18th. And in England at the Rochester Castle in Kent, South England, that is August 11th. There's a couple more, I guess, in Ireland, too, coming in June. And Montreal is scheduled for July as well.
Montreal.
So, oh, yeah. Okay. Have you ever been to Montreal? It's a cool town.
I have. Not in some time, but I visited Montreal years ago.
Yeah. I got a good friend of mine there, Francis Lalumiere. A little shout out to him. Good guy. I used to work with him. He lives there. So yeah, that's it. And there's he's a busy man. He's got a lot of stuff coming up here, and I'm assuming that a few of these locations are going to tie in with this. I think this Highlander trip that I know Carmel was looking at doing.
Oh, sure.
So I don't know if that's still happening, but I'm assuming it might be tied in with that stuff. So
yeah, well, I mean, he did Ireland, Scotland, France, England last year, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, so make sure you head over to swordexperience.com. Also follow them on Twitter too. They're a lot of fun. They always put a lot of fun updates there.
Yeah.
And I'm expecting the video of my Atlantis sword experience to be coming out soon. I want to see if those quickenings come out.
Yeah, buddy. I'm going to be taking a clip. I'm going to be posting that all over the place.
That's right. Well, you got anything else here in Joseph? Otherwise, I thought we'd head on out.
Well, I also wanted to mention that the Sword Experience podcast is going to be launching fairly soon, I also believe.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yes, that's March 1st they were targeting.
Yeah,
yes.
So that's going to be, as of this recording, that's going to be on the Thursday of this recording date.
Yeah. And that's right. And I'm excited about that because, you know, they're going to be covering some other fun stuff like pop culture and everything. So it's not going to be strictly just about Sword Experience.
Right.
But they're going to talk about some other stuff as well, so I'm really curious about it. So make sure you check your podcast catchers and subscribe to the Sword Experience podcast. All right. Well, Norm, I'm going to keep on sipping this good stuff here. What do you say we head on out of Joe's? All right. Tonight's show, Blood of Kings 70, Highlander the Raven, episode review part one, A Matter of Time. This is the intro to the Raven show. She is immortal, 1,000 years old. She cannot die. A creature of legend, like the Raven, a thief who stole the sun and the moon. They sent a warrior to bring her back. He found her, and together they brought back light to the world. I was a cop. To me, she was just a thief, another day on the job. But she wasn't. She changed my life forever and changed everything. And both of us knew from that moment on, nothing would ever be the same.
I like this sexy voice of yours.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah.
Imagine that. Imagine that cool Raven theme kicking in there.
The Raven and the wolf. Yeah.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be covering the two-part episode of Raven here, and that's episode 12, A Matter of Time, and then episode 13, The French Connection. But this episode, we're talking about A Matter of Time, and I'm really excited about this. This is episode 12. Episode aired February 1st, 1999, directed by Dennis Barry, and the writer was Karen Harris. Mm-hmm. Norm, I thought that you would read the excerpt from the awesome John Mosby's book,
mm-hmm.
Fearful Symmetry, talking about the episode A Matter of Time.
Before I do that, I would like to pat ourselves on the back for hitting 70. Blood of Kings 70.
That's right. Yeah.
It's a nice round
number. Wow, number 70. It is. And technically, we've done more because of the Kingmakers and stuff like that, but still, that's awesome.
Yeah, we're 30 away now from the big 100.
So that's right.
Looking forward to it being, you know, only a couple, six, 7 weeks into this year. I'm pretty sure we're going to hit like 100 somewhere around September, October.
Ooh, I'm excited, man.
So I would be happy to read this excerpt of this episode, A Matter of Time, from the great John Mosby's book, Fearful Symmetry. So, A Matter of Time, written by Karen Harris, directed by Dennis Barry. Nick is chasing a suspect through viaducts and intersections when he comes across a body. It's fairly nondescript, except for the fact that on the man's wrist is a tattoo, and lying beside him is an Eastern pendant. He continues to chase his original suspect, but returning to the spot where the body fell, he sees men loading the body into a van. When he challenges them, he's caught off guard by their leader, a man named Joe Dawson. Joe says he's in the area as Amanda was being followed by an immortal named Andre Korda. Amanda first encountered him on the Chinese coast in 1907. Korda was treated by the locals as some sort of divinity and relishes in the power. He easily outclasses her in swordsmanship and could have taken her life, but instead he decides to take her as a student to teach her that immortals are hawks and mortals are merely sparrows. He wants a partner and promises to show Amanda the skills of the flying rainbow fan, a more artistic bladed weapon than a traditional sword, and one that is as much to do with surrender as attack. But he says it will take a lifetime to learn. However, like the weapon, agility without force and surrender without resistance are aspects he demands in life as well. And since when he has Amanda ever been patient? Seeing how ruthless he is, she flees. Back in the present, Corda is a businessman running a nightclub called The Sanctuary and wants Amanda to join him again. If not, she dies. Leaving for Paris, he instructs his immortal assistant, Krista, to take care of business, and thereafter, Joe delivers terrible news to Nick about Amanda's fate. Also featuring Peter Mencia as Raphael, Ellen Dubin as Crystal, and Helen Wu as female martial artist.
Oh, we'll be talking about her shortly.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, if you read a little bit further into the Raven section in John's book, A Fearful Symmetry, there was a quote that he said about these two episodes, and I want to mention that. It says, "A Matter of Time / The French Connection are the watershed episodes for The Raven, the moment where the series fully embraces its Highlander heritage in more ways than one." John Mosby. Mm-hmm. So this is the reason why I chose these two episodes to cover, because, for several reasons. Because it changes productions from, you know, one continent to another. Also, it's a two-parter, which, you know, Highlander loves to do when it moves from Seacouver over to Paris. It has a couple of returning guests that we are familiar with and very fond of. Mm-hmm. And these are just two good back-to-back episodes of The Raven that are fun to watch and are pretty iconic for the series.
I think that when John says it's a watershed moment for The Raven, I think that a lot of Highlander fans, that pretty much they embraced The Raven because it says Highlander, but that didn't necessarily embrace it because of the storyline or the characters at first. But
right.
This episode does have all those kind of touchstone moments that Highlander has, that Highlander, Duncan MacLeod's Highlander series had. Because once you like shift the production over to Paris, it takes on a completely special kind of quality, right?
Right.
But that being said, Joe Dawson, Jim Burns, brings a lot to this episode that we're talking about, A Matter of Time. And so does Valentine Pelka, even though I disagree with his casting in the role of Andre Korda.
I want you to touch on that later when we talk about him, because I'm curious about that.
Everyone's listening, like, okay. What? What do you mean? But I have my reasons, and I think they're valid.
So. Well, of course, as the cast again, Elizabeth Grayson plays Amanda Dario / Amanda Montrose. Mm-hmm. Paul Johansson back as Nick Wolfe. Jim Burns visiting as Joe Dawson. Valentine Pelka as Andre Korda. Ellen Dubin as Krista. Mm-hmm. And Hans Jacne, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, Bert Myers. And then Peter Mensa as Raphael. Mm-hmm. The next point that I want to talk about, though, because this is something that you and I have experienced with Elizabeth Grayson, is the Flying Rainbow Fancotta martial arts. For a flashback scene in the episode A Matter of Time, Elizabeth Grayson learns the Flying Rainbow Fan martial arts from the master of the art, Helen Wu.
Right.
Now, before I get into Helen Wu, both you and I have taken Elizabeth Grayson's class. I took her class in Lakeland, Florida, and then you recently in LA for the Highlander 25th Anniversary Convention.
Yep.
And I thought that we would give a little personal experience of that. I remember when you were talking about it, Norm, and I wanted you to touch on your experience first. You got a little bit of a workout with it, right? That's what you remember from it?
It was easily the hardest class I did that weekend, like by far.
Why is that? Why is that?
Because I think it challenges parts of your body that you usually don't use in sword fighting. There's a lot more like agility without force, right? You have to be strong, but you have to be supple. You have to be agile, but you don't have to be strong. You have to be able to resist, but you also have to and surrender, but you also have to kind of like have that inner strength. So I understand right. A lot of kind of the philosophy of what Andre Korda was talking about, and it challenges like your body to move in certain ways and hold certain positions and to be really focused. But like that old Bruce Lee saying, you know, you have to move like water, because water, it can take the shape of any container that it's held in. And you have to flow like water and just be really kind of smooth and natural. But in order to do that, you have to have command over your entire physicality. And that's really right. hard. Derek May was amazing in that class.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that Elizabeth really appreciated his help because he is a Chinese martial artist and really understood how this fan kata worked, even though I think he was coming from a different, slightly different discipline than the Helen Wu style of this fan kata.
Yeah, I believe he was there in Lakeland, Florida as well. And to a certain degree, though, I found it kind of relaxing, even though it was tough because you had to hold certain forms for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then trying to remember the parts because, you know, Elizabeth was great because she taught them in little short segments. And then you put all the pieces together and it kind of makes this dance as well.
Right.
But there was something cool about like snapping open that fan, you know, at a certain time, because it sounds really cool, yeah. You know. Did you bring your own fan or did you get one that was provided by the class?
I got one that was provided by the class because I was really out of my element. Going into that. I've taken, you know, Asian martial arts before. I've taken Taekwondo. I've taken Shaolin Kenpo. And a little bit of Judo. But this was different because the fan... It was an offensive and defensive weapon, and it's also very culturally significant to this kata. And it was just something that was completely new to me. I mean, I'm used to holding these giant steel swords, and this is something that's obviously, it was created. Well, the actual iron fan that she actually had and she let us hold, it's a completely different dynamic. It was spiked on the ends. It was kind of like a giant iron club. So using that weapon in historical context, I can see how this thing can be very effective. But I got the fan from Elizabeth, and then she signed all the fans for all of her students, which was fantastic.
That's great.
You know, she took time to just talk to everybody. And
I know you guys took a group picture, right? Did you take any other pictures during that event? Do you remember?
No, I personally didn't because I had my hands full, you know, with the fan itself. But I think that one of Sean Dempsey's friends took a bunch of pictures too, and one of Derek May's friends took a bunch of pictures as well.
There are some cool pictures that came out of the Lakeland class that she did, and that was a lot of fun.
Well, hopefully that we'll have some of those in the upcoming DVD from the 25th anniversary.
Oh, I know. That's right. Yeah. Well, I want to talk about Helen Wu, who is the master of this, and she taught Elizabeth Grayson for this episode. Helen Wu was born in 1956 as a martial artist living in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, the daughter of Wang Zhurong and Wu Shenei. Helen began her martial arts training at age 3 with her mother and her grandfather, Wang Ziping, the world-renowned Wushu Grand Master. After graduation from Shanghai University, Wu began teaching in the Department of Sports Medicine. Wu now lives and teaches in Toronto, Canada, where she served on the board of Canadian Taekwondo Federation of United Wushu Federation of Canada. She is a faculty member of the York University School of Kinesiology and Health Science. Wu has acted as a consultant on several studies on the benefits of Shi Qian, the effects of vigorous exercise training on motor function and functionality, fitness in juvenile arthritis, feasible and impact of Qi Gon as compared to aerobic exercise in the treatment of childhood chronic musculoskeletal pain. Professional accomplishments. Wu's an accomplished Wushu coach. Her training methods have produced medal-winning athletes, silver medal group events category, USA competition in 1999, 19 medals, including silver and bronze, all-round grand championships, 23 medals, including bronze, all-round grand championships, and Wu also co-authored with Wen Shang Wu, Tai Chi, Single Fan for Health and Martial Arts, and Shi Cheng, Tai Chi and Fan, a step-by-step training courses for wellness and personal development. They were used as text for her courses at York University. She also published articles for martial arts magazines, Flying Rainbow, The Fan of Martial Arts, co-authored with Marcia Zust for Kung Fu Magazine in 1999, and A Fan for Life for Inside Kung Fu Magazine. So I think that she was definitely qualified for this.
Oh, yeah.
And she's well known around the world. And says here, Flying Rainbow Fan Tai Chi. Okay, so this is interesting. Says, I think no discussion of modern Tai Chi fan would be complete without mentioning a Flying Rainbow fan style. The Flying Rainbow form was developed by the famous female artist Wang Zhurong from 1928 to 2006, who herself was the daughter of Wang Ziping, a well-known figure in Chinese martial arts and traditional medicine. So you can definitely see that she is has a lot of accolades, and she knows what she's doing, and I assume that she's still teaching.
I mean, she's not only a trainer, but I mean, she's a trained kinesiologist. She looks like,
and I apologize for butchering some of those.
I mean, I'm not fluent in any of the Chinese language translations or
I would love to pick her brain though.
Yeah. I mean, this is, again, it's not only does she have the mastery over the martial art part of it, but she applies it to the way people move and
right.
How the juvenile arthritis, I actually thought was very interesting, because there are a lot of athletes, they start at a young age and they start creating a lot of these, I guess it would be calcium deposits, the impact of their joints. They start actually losing flexibility and a lot of injury happens, you know, to a lot of these younger, especially Olympic athletes. Right. So, wow. I mean, yeah, the accolades that she has are just remarkable.
I love the little brief flashback scene in this episode too, showing them working together, and both of them looked very graceful. And it was nice also too that you could tell that Elizabeth, as Amanda, really took to learning that art. And when you take her class, you can see that it's paid off, and that she takes it very seriously, and she really enjoys doing it.
I agree. I think that her methodology in teaching and the way that she breaks down her course, Elizabeth, I'm talking about, and the exactness that she wants to have people, her students, learn, I think that she feels personally responsible for being Helen's student and for imparting some of that education onto us, you know, her students, I guess, you know, so she's become a teacher as she was a student to Helen. And I think it's a nice kind of paying it forward, but she also wants her students to go away with, you know, a decent knowledge of what she learned as well. I think I found that very responsible of her, you know, in that way.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, I say we head on to the next point, Norm. Dude, Joe Dawson returns.
Yeah. That's
Jim Burns is back in a Highlander TV show. I love this.
I think that's where maybe John Mosby saying that this is a watershed moment for the Raven, because you're not just bringing in any character or any alumni or any crossover character. I mean, you're bringing in Jim Burns. You're bringing in Joe Dawson, you know, the Watchers.
Yeah.
In a very serious way. And when you bring in that character, you bring in everything about that character that we've learned ever since his first appearance in season two of Adrian's series.
Yeah.
And there's so much there, and there's a lot there that he had a lot of history with Amanda. I mean, when Amanda convinced him to betray the Watchers again, when Duncan was locked up in the episode, The Colonel, and then Joe's like, our friendship's bigger than the Watchers, but Amanda kind of forced him to do that. So you know that there's a lot of history between those two.
And I like, was it the line that Amanda said when Joe was they were both talking with Nick, and Nick was learning about the Watchers and who they were. And I love that little line where Amanda goes, Watchers are like mosquitoes. They're you know, you need them, but then you just swat them away or something.
You swat the few away that annoy you or something like that. Yeah.
But I like this too, because, you know, Nick falls into something here. He doesn't quite know what's going on, and he understands the bigger world of the immortals. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I like how he asked Joe, like, well, how long has this organization of the Watchers been around? And Joe's like, over 4,000 years.
Yeah, give or take.
Yeah. Yeah, but I like the fact that, like, you know, he explains how he got into it, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, because of an immortal that saved him during the war, he finds his work as a Watcher, he finds there's honor in it, you know, and he likes what he does, you know. So
Joe was being a little bit more of a stickler of the rules in this episode than he was in Highlander, the series, a little bit.
Yeah, right? A little bit. Yeah.
Because he did. I mean, he could have prevented some of the characters. I mean, in the there was a heist, and he was watching Andre Korda gun down some characters in a one of those security vans or
And, but I thought that was cool though. You know, he was doing his job, but he didn't like it.
Right.
You know,
and I think he's learned a lot from his interference, you know, in Duncan's life, that he's like, no, I got to dial this back. I got to go back to why I started this whole career in the first place.
But he said that he did call the ambulance.
He can't just not stand by, right? It was like, Joe's still kind of not following the rules 100%.
To his introduction, you know, when Nick comes down, he sees those mysterious guys taking the body away of the Watcher, and you know, the gun's pulled on Nick, and then just right out, he says, "You don't know me. I'm Joe Dawson." You know, so Joe obviously knows who he is, and he knows that he can introduce himself because, you know, he's about to bring Nick into a bigger world of the Immortal Game.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that I should have asked Jim this, and maybe he wouldn't have like a real good answer, but why does Joe gangster hold his gun?
I know, right?
It just kind of,
you hold it sideways.
It just kind of bugs me a little bit. Maybe it's because maybe one of the producers is like, this is what the kids like, you know, hold your gun sideways because it makes you look like a gangster. Yeah. I don't know.
I can just feel F. Braun cringing right now.
Right?
Because he's always been a stickler on how you handle handguns.
And Joe doesn't do it consistently. You know, when he drew his weapon on Nick, when he got behind him, it was fine. You know, it's just when there's like that Mexican standoff in the car later on in the episode, it's like, oh, gangster style. Okay. I don't
know. Yeah. You know, I think this was a great Joe performance too, overall, when you put him with all the Highlander episodes and, you know, just to where he has to lie to Nick about the fate of Amanda. Which I thought was a really cool scene.
Can I make a point about that? When I watched this episode, I wanted to specifically talk about that moment because, and I think this goes into what John is saying. At the end of Song of the Executioner, Dr. Anne Lindsley watches Duncan die. And Richie had to explain to Anne that this is all over. This is all done, you know, and there's that heartache because right before this happened, Amanda kisses Nick and they kind of, you know, Joe convinces her, like, you know, you gotta resolve this. You know, I've seen the two of you together and there's this unspoken attraction between you two. And then Amanda just kind of gives into it. Remember, there's a whole theme of, you know, resistance is futile and, you know, suppleness versus strength and agility versus force. So she gives into her desire for Nick and so does Nick. And then all of a sudden she sees, you know, Nick assumes that Amanda lost to Krista Van Pelt in the alleyway. And Joe feeds into that. And it's like, this is just like Song of the Executioner. Just like it. And Song of the Executioner, the next episode is Starcrossed when it goes from Seacouver to Paris. The parallels here are so strong. Right? Yeah. And I just felt like that Nick was suffering what Dr. Anne Lindsay was suffering at the time.
No, yeah, you're totally right. A little shout out to Krista Van Pelt's character, by the way. There is a Highlander CCG persona of her. Mm-hmm. I think it's in that Raven Limited series that came out a while ago, which I did get. I made a deck. Yep. Well, let's talk about another returning Highlander alumni that we love dearly, and that's Valentine Pelka returns. Mm-hmm. His character, Andre Korda, runs a nightclub, The Sanctuary, where it's a front for his base of international operation for his criminal activity of extortion, theft, and kidnapping. And he also has a long history with Elizabeth Grayson's character, where they met on the China coast around 100 years ago. Yeah. I want to start with you, Norm, because you have a little issue with this casting.
I do. I do. And it's because Valentine Pelka as Kronos is one of the single greatest casting choices ever. Like in the history of any TV show that I've ever seen. Like Peter Wingfield as Mythos was a home run. Valentine Pelka was a triple home run because he brought so much to Kronos right from the get-go, right from when you saw him in Comes a Horseman as Melvin Korin. You're like, who is this guy? And then all of a sudden he throws the dagger in Mythos' chest. He walks up and he goes, "Greetings, brother." You know, he owns Kronos. And
great intro. Exactly,
and Valentine has a certain look. His voice is very distinct, and he has a very particular acting style. And when I saw him appear as Andre Korda, I could not get Kronos out of my head, no matter how good he was as Andre Korda. And he was.
Right.
But his voice cuts through the air just like a laser beam. Right?
Yeah.
So I can't help but, do I like Andre Korda because he's a good character, or do I like Andre Korda because it's Valentine Pelka? And I wanted a bigger separation of these two characters. Like, I wanted another actor to bring Andre Korda to life and invest myself in that actor versus, like, I love Valentine Pelka so much, I don't care if he's reading the phone book right now. I love seeing him on screen, right? Joe is still Joe. I love Jim Burns as Joe, and he knows how to inhabit that character. Valentine Pelka is Valentine Pelka regardless of whatever character he plays. I saw it on Queen of Swords. It was the same thing. Right? So to be fair to the Andre Korda character, I can't be, because Valentine Pelka's persona, his own personal character, is so strong that I don't see Andre Korda anymore. I see Valentine Pelka.
I think I might disagree with you a little bit, because I was able to differentiate the two. And I guess the reason why is because what I liked about Andre Korda was is he was this kind of international gangster. And I love the fact that he sought out immortal women to basically, you know, use as you know, his strong right arm or whatever, you know, as his muscle at times, you know. And he obviously manipulated them to a certain degree as well. I like the fact that he had base in more, you know, in more than one country, so he could spread his criminal activity. There was just certain inflections that he did, especially there's certain scenes, like when he's talking to Nick in the car, and, you know, Nick's trying to, like, arrest him, and there's a little standoff there. And you know, I know he's his character of Kronos is so iconic, but I was able to see a little bit different character in this personally. And you know, I love him, and I would love to see more of him. And it was good to see him come back and do this. I didn't have the issue that you did watching it. I kind of bought it, I guess. I don't know. Or maybe I was able to. Maybe it's been a while since I've seen the Four Horsemen episodes. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that's it. If I had watched that right before, maybe I would be in your seat somewhat. But I really enjoyed him, his casting.
I just think for me that I think another actor would have been less distracting, you know,
right.
But
yeah.
Again, it's, yeah. I'm not taking anything away from his performance. And I agree. I think that the character of Andre Korda is very interesting, but yeah. I would have liked to have, and there are plenty of Canadian based actors that are fantastic at being bad guys. And we see them on, like, shows like Continuum or any characters on the Sci-Fi Channel, since they pull a lot of Canadian actors there, or on the CW. So it's one of those things where, I think that given the chance, I would have liked to have seen someone else inhabit that character, just because I would have liked to have seen a new actor bring on the role of something great, you know, like a really cool character. So that, again, for me, because Valentine Pelka for me will always be Kronos. It's hard for me to separate the two.
Oh, I know. Me too, man. I want to talk about another character. His name is Burt Myers. Mm-hmm. Reoccurring character Burt Myers, played by Hans Janik, returns, a friend of Nick Wolf, who is a former Fed now running his own security firm. I was digging this guy's character. he's kind of like, he's got his hands in a little bit of everything. He's kind of like an information broker as well, because you need one of those guys. But he's also a trusted friend of Nick. What's your take on Burt Myers' character here?
Well, I think Burt Myers, Burt the Merc, right? I mean, he's essentially a Merc, you know, and we saw him earlier on in the series, and he runs his own little private security agency. I like this character, and he's kind of like, when I see a character like Burt or Myers, I think that everyone calls him Myers, right? Mm-hmm. He's the kind of character that you want to see evolve over time, you know, and we never got a chance to. You know, there's a lot going on with, I guess, the layers of this character, and Hans brings a really cool kind of Soldier of Fortune vibe to him.
Yeah.
There's obviously more there than meets the eye, and it's one of those kind of things where when I watch this character, I'm like, damn, we never got a chance to see him, you know, like right. Charlie. Right.
Right.
Yeah. He's kind of, I can see that vibe because Charlie was a Navy SEAL. You know, he fought in all these, you know, these different Navy SEAL missions, and he probably right. has a little bit of a past, and he probably has some issues, you know, that he needs to work out. Also,
it's a character you have loved to have seen develop more.
Yeah. Because he slips in there really easily.
Yeah. What I like about him was that it was nice to have someone that Nick's character can bounce off and talk with and bond with, because we know this is, you know, pretty much Amanda's show.
Yeah.
And you see her friends or her enemies and stuff. And it's nice that Nick has something, a friend that can help contribute to whatever shenanigans that the story takes them. And I liked, there are certain scenes, and we'll talk more about it, I guess, in the next episode. But it was kind of nice to see them work together. And I just like the fact that he and Nick bounced off well together because they know each other so
history,
well.
Yeah, they got history, you know, so like Bert won't take his crap, you know, and he'll call him on.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And just their little jabs at each other and little, you know, jokes and stuff. I always thought that was great. The next point I want to talk about is the moonlighting
some
parallel.
Some fly by night, some fly by day, moonlighting strangers. Oh, I remember. Yeah.
Do you remember who sang that song?
I believe that was. Oh, hold on a second. Oh,
God, is it Al Jarreau?
Al Jarreau. You're right. Yeah.
Al Jarreau. Yeah.
Right.
That's right. Nice job, by the way. That's good. Amanda kisses Nick and establishes a bit of intimacy with no major ramifications, but acknowledge their bond. Yeah. I want to bring this up because, when you watch the special features of the Raven DVD, my only disappointment with them is that it seems like it's all one topic that's cut up into certain parts, that it's cut up in individual parts and spread out through the DVDs. And it's all about how the Raven ended up failing.
Yeah.
And also it talked about how there was some tension between the actors as well. So it all talked about the problems. I wish the DVDs were more like the Highlander DVDs, where you had people actually talking about the episode that you're watching, you know, with behind the scenes stuff. So, but there was some known tension between Elizabeth Grayson and Paul Johansson. Mm-hmm. Of course, there was other factors as well that what Elizabeth was going through.
Yeah.
But what I liked about this episode is that whether they liked each other on or off behind the camera, you really kind of got a feeling that their characters are really starting to care for each other. And so let me ask you about that. Do you see a moonlighting parallel, though? Is that something that you thought that definitely was starting to come together? Or what did you get out of that?
Well, first of all, I mean, knowing the behind the scenes and kind of like the relationship or lack thereof between Elizabeth and Paul, because they made it very well known. We're not inventing that. They actually say that in the behind the scenes. So knowing that and seeing their characters, seeing Amanda and Nick kind of melt towards each other, that's great acting, right? Because you're believing that they want to start trusting each other more. They obviously are stepping in each other's spaces more comfortably. And then she just makes Elizabeth as Amanda makes that bold first move and just says, hey, you know what? Joe's right. There's something here. There's an attraction between us. Let's see where this goes. And let's see if it kind of fixes a little bit of our situation where we're always at each other's throats because we have this sexual tension that really needs to be worked out. And I felt that the two of them together in Nick's place, you know, when he's doing the boxing thing and she comes over and she's trying to drop her guard because Amanda's always been guarded, right? She's always used humor as deflection, and she's always used guile and deception as a way to protect herself. But I think she wants to drop all that and really trust this guy. Not in the same way that she felt towards Duncan. I think that she feels towards Nick a very completely different way. Like, this guy, he doesn't take any of my crap. He throws it right back at me as good as he gets. And I think that he's a really good partner for me. And maybe... And I don't want to jump the series here, but maybe something that we learned at the very end of the series is the reason why. I don't want to jump ahead, but there's a very serious point at the end of the series in the very last episode, dead on arrival, or maybe Amanda's like, you know what? Something could be special here.
I think actually that you brought that up and we talked about it, that when we return to talking about the Raven again, I think that we should cover that episode because we didn't get to see a season two, and it would be nice to kind of speculate and ask some of the fans out there what they would have liked to have seen from season two. Yeah. So, yeah, that's a good point.
I think also that even though that they kind of, I guess, took that next step in their relationship, it doesn't get in the way of them still jabbing each other when they can.
Yeah.
And I find that very
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's kind of like a moonlighting reference in relationship there for sure.
And I did like the scene when, you know, you could see when Joe was lying to him, but confirming that Amanda was dead. And you could see, you know, how rough Nick was taking that and why he wanted to travel and chase, you know, Corda to Paris to get his own type of retribution or revenge, you know, and he gets in a little over his head.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He's stepping into a completely different world now.
But yeah, you know, I'm kind of curious, you know, how behind the scenes, what was happening in this episode between, you know, Elizabeth and Paul Johansson's character, because to me, they were selling it. I was buying it, you know, and I really, really enjoyed them. And with Joe mixed in there too, I thought it was great, you know? So, yeah. Well, point seven, I want to say looking ahead, but to ponder only to be answered in the next episode, A Matter of Time. / episode 13, The French Connection. Are these two episodes the quintessential and must-see episodes of Highlander the Raven? Now, I don't want you to answer that yet, Norman, because I want our listeners to also consider this and ponder this too. And then we will follow up with this in the next episode when we talk about The French Connection. Because just kind of like what John Mosby says, this kind of covers all of the Highlander criteria to a certain degree. Would you agree with that?
It does fall into a lot of Highlander traditions, that's for sure.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to get your final thoughts on talking about A Matter of Time here, Norm. What's your thoughts?
I think that very much like Band of Brothers, I think that this was the Raven's Band of Brothers for me. And I think it's I think it's also because you're bringing in Joe Dawson. Joe Dawson is an anchor for Highlander. Or right. Jim Burns also, you know, one and the same. Yeah. He's an anchor for Highlanders. So it's hard to say. You know, when you bring in someone as iconic as Joe, you bring in all of the feelings that you have for that character from a different series into this series. It's very much like at the very beginning of Deep Space Nine, the pilot episode, right? The Emissary.
Uh-huh.
Great episode, but would it have been as great if Jean-Luc Picard was not in that episode anchoring that episode?
That's a good... Yeah, especially with the reference to Wolf 359 and the Battle of the Borg. Right. Yeah, you're right.
So would this episode have been as good if Joe Dawson wasn't in this episode?
That's a good question. You know, it's probably not, but it's hard to say depending on who else they would have gotten.
So not being able to change the past, I'm solely basing my decision on I love this episode, and I call it the Band of Brothers episode for the Raven because it does change the paradigm of how you feel about this episode. It brings in something that is, one, it's new, like the Helen Wu fan cotta, which is fantastic because it's another dimension of Amanda's character. But also, it introduces Nick to this completely other world of the Watchers. Until this time, it's just the Immortals. And now there's a whole other secret society that I need to know about.
Right, yeah.
But again, using the iconic trappings of Joe, the Watchers, and those really heavy themes from Duncan's or Adrian's series, it kind of falsely inflates your love for the episode, right?
Yeah.
So I think I'm fair to say that. It's kind of like it's good, but it's epic because of those elements.
That's true. That's a good point.
And maybe the producers at the time said, hey, you know what? We need something in here to give us some more juice. Let's bring in Joe. You know, he's not Duncan. He's not any of the major characters. He's not Mythos, you know, he's not any of the big characters, really, those top tier characters, but he's big enough to, for the fans to fall in love with the series when they see him.
Yeah. Well, I remember when we, last year, when we covered the first episode of Raven, our big problem with it was that it didn't feel Highlander. You know, it was more of kind of like a, you know, a film noir kind of cop whodunit drama. You know, there was no sword fight. There was no quickening, you know, but this one gives you a little bit, a little taste of that stuff. And that's what I like about it. And I like the way that it ends and then takes you to Paris. And there's a lot of things that I liked about it other than Valentine Pelka and Jim Burns returning. I love the flashback to the China Coast. I thought that was really cool. I love the costumes. Mm-hmm. And I love the first meeting between Corda and Amanda. I thought that was really cool. You know, how he did some little trick there and was able to almost take her head, but then didn't. But then he puts his sword down and says, "I'm at your mercy," and she attacks, and then he shows his little fan kata trick. And so I thought that was really cool. There's a lot of other little things about it. I like Krista. I thought she was interesting too. I thought it delivered on most counts. So I was very pleased with that episode. So then going to the Kevin's Immortal Quickening scale, Norm, mm-hmm. from 1 being, of course, Katana and Richie's jacket to 10 being Mythos. Mm-hmm. Where would you put A Matter of Time?
I would give this I have two caveats here for myself.
Okay.
I have to judge this episode based on what I have liked it or what I have not liked it more, with or without Joe. Joe is a huge factor in it because it's...
Well, Joe's in it, right. So you got to go with that factor.
Yeah, I do, but at the same time, though, it's kind of like, you know, it's artificially inflated, in my opinion. So knowing that and knowing how I feel about that, I'm going to judge it on its merits and say I'm going to give it a solid Connor and Kurgan.
Connor and Kurgan, number mm-hmm. 7. Okay, yeah. Cool. Well, I was kind of with you there. I'm going to judge it as for a Raven episode, not as a Highlander TV series episode. Mm-hmm. I got to judge it as a Raven episode. And I'm actually going to give it a number 8, a Duncan and Kierdwin. Mm-hmm. And I think of the ones that I've seen, it's probably one of my favorites. And I really, really liked it. I thought it flowed well. And I like to judge it. I don't want to judge it against the Highlander TV series because it had a lot more episodes, a lot more iconic episodes. Obviously, it had more than one season. So I have to judge it on, you know, what the one season Highlander, the Raven, gave me. And it was a great episode. I loved it. So I'm going to give it
an
8.
That's fair, for sure.
All right. Well, Norm, it's been fun talking about Highlander the Raven here. Episode part 1, A Matter of Time. Of course, next week we're going to be doing episode 71, Highlander the Raven, episode part 2, which is The French Connection. Of course, last week we did talk about Highlander the Promise, the Mythos audiobook. But Norm, I thought you'd let our listeners know what else is happening on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Oh, we're always busy here on the Fandom Podcast Network. We have Culture Clash, which is the flagship show. And on Culture Clash, Kevin and Kyle do a fantastic job talking about the pop culture fandom state of the union, I guess, as has pop culture is happening now. It's fast and furious. I mean, I just saw Black Panther and it was fantastic and much to say about that. But the big countdown right now is to March 30th, and that would be the countdown to Ready Player One with Kevin's Gunter's Guide to Ready Player One. If you're not familiar with that word, a Gunter is an egg hunter. They are hunting the great Easter egg that was left behind by one James Halliday, who is leaving behind his great fortune.
Or millions of dollars are up for grabs if you know your 80s That's trivia. Right.
And so you're picking particular specific points to discuss in the Gunter's Guide. You're also talking about your countdown to the Avengers Infinity Wars, where you are doing a theatrical release study, film for film, theatrically released.
Yeah. Each week we've been talking about each of the films that have been released, and we're going to talk about that all the way through, which will end up with watching, of course, the eventual release of Avengers Infinity War. It's been fun going back and, you know, talking about all of these films and how our opinion has changed on some of them after rewatching them after a while. It's been interesting.
So the very last film that you would cover, would you cover Black Panther? Or,
well, we actually already did cover Black Panther because it just came out, so it was kind of like a little bonus thing because you got to talk about it as soon as it comes out.
So you're not
going to
like recover it. Yeah.
Well, it depends. I don't know how soon it's going to come out on video, but we will definitely reflect back on Black Panther after we discuss the last. I think it was it Civil War? No, I'm sorry. No, Thor Ragnarok. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, Thor Ragnarok. Because, you know, there's some stuff that happened at the very end credit scenes of Black Panther that are interesting.
Right.
So, yeah, we're definitely going to touch
on
that.
Awesome stuff. Wakanda forever. So,
yes.
And then we have Couch Potato Theater. If you don't know what Couch Potato Theater is, imagine yourself lying on the couch and you see your favorite or one of your favorite movies come on TBS or TNT or one of those channels that chops up movies with commercials. And you know that you have that movie in the back and you're like, hey, you know what? I'm too lazy to get up. I like the potato crumbs on or potato chip crumbs all over my shirt. I'm just going to watch it here. So we have finished up just recently Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man, and coming soon to hold on a second. Did you touch my gun? Did somebody change my sights? Who touched my gun? The great Tango and Cash, the great buddy cop, one of the last, if not the last, great buddy cop movie of the 80s.
Who holds the pink slip? Satan.
Yeah. So you covered that, and that should be coming out fairly soon.
Yeah.
And Kev, this is yours. You got to talk about Time Warp.
Yes, we got 1985, the movies. Part one is out right now. We're going to do a four-part series celebrating all of the films of 1985, also pop culture and music and TV and politics as well. And, of course, Kyle was on there, and, of course, Aaron Gill. And new to the network, a good friend of mine here locally named Alex Autry. Big, big movie buff. And we had a blast talking about the first 3 months of films that came out in January, February, and March, including Breakfast Club, Tough Turf, Into the Night, and also the classic movie Malibu Express by Andy Sidaris.
That's something that kids, you have to go to bed early for that movie.
Yes, he was the late night of Skinamax, yeah, let's just put it that way. But it was a lot of fun, and Norm, you're going to be joining us next for part two in the next month
I'm looking forward to that because there are a lot of great movies there too. But it is the 80th of all 1980s, the years.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of good feedback on that too, and I really appreciate that because it's a lot of fun to cover.
Well, I mean, with Ready Player One, I have to believe that there's going to be just kind of like the floodgates opening for 1980s pop culture. It's going to open that up.
Yeah.
So we're all there covering that. We also have Discoville, which covers Star Trek Discovery and The Orville, and both of those series have wrapped up, and we are going to take a look back at some of the episodes that are near and dear to us. We're going to take a look at the world of The Orville, which is the so far only officially released product of The Orville, which is a fantastic compilation book that covers a lot of the episodes, costumes, props, and a lot of behind the scenes there. So we're excited to cover that fairly soon. Also, we have Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with Tom Caldwell, Brandon Schiamatella, and Chris Haig talking about the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. A film collegiate level studies course of a podcast.
Definitely,
when you watch
yes.
this or listen to this episode. And then, are we going to be talking about the combines on the End Zone? Because the combines have started.
Yeah, no, we're going to wait till free agency hits because that's going to be happening in early March, I think. And that's when stuff really starts happening. And so we're going to do a special End Zone covering the NFL free agency.
And there you go. That's what's happening on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Well, thank you very much, Norm. Hope you've enjoyed talking about Little Raven. I was really excited about doing this. And, you know, we love Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. She's so sweet. And it's always fun to go back and look back on the Raven. And I really enjoy her performance as Amanda anywhere.
I approach the Raven the way that I think a lot of people now are approaching Star Trek Enterprise, from distance and time and forgiveness. Because I think that if you take a look at the Raven and what the production company was up against, losing a lot of the alumni and support from Highlander the series to Highlander the Raven, and having things just entire worlds changed. I think that when you take a look back at the Raven, and we're probably going to have to do a little bit more of a comprehensive rewatch for the whole series and cover that. I think that what they attempted to do was very ambitious and at times succeeded more than it didn't. And again, you just have to kind of distance yourself from it, rewatch it now, and then kind of like make a better observation of what happened when you're not caught up in your own angst of emotion and having the end of 6 years kind of like roll into this entirely new production, not being able to emotionally distance yourself from what happened. So I think it's a good time to kind of like take a look at it and throw our support behind this show, because Elizabeth is such a fantastic member of our community, and the hurdles that a lot of them had to jump to do this show, I think, were a little bit more than a lot of people realized.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes down to it, if you're a fan of Amanda, you get your fill watching The Raven. You know, she is wonderful and she's funny. She's charming. And she's just a great actress too. She just totally encompasses this character. And if I can get more Amanda watching The Raven, I'd love it. So I think that's great. Well, thank you again, Norm. Next week, of course, we will discuss part 2, The French Connection. I'm Kevin. On behalf of my co-host, Norman, thanks everyone for listening. And join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Norm, that sensation you are feeling is the quickening. We are one. We are brothers. Goodbye, everyone.